I didn't live the way I should have, always working so that someday I could take my family places. Someday it was stolen from me. I'm going to enjoy today. I'm sorry about your family, Todd replied solemnly. I've cried for 7 months. I am ready to start living again. I think it's what held a lot of us back, the memories of our families here in New York. I will never forget. But I have to move forward. I have to learn from my mistakes. Ahmed paused. This day is about fun. Let's have some fun. I want my last memories of New York to be happy. Bernie sat in the passenger seat. Todd and Ahmed were the last to get into the van. The rows were packed with people and kids. Kelly put the van into gear and headed down Fifth Avenue towards Chelsea. There was still snow on the ground, but the tire tracks from the multiple trips melted exposed black pavement. The van was abuzz with conversation. What were people's favorite cartoon characters? The last great sandwich they ate? The last vacation they took? Everyone wanted to get to know each other. They made a quick stop by the Empire State Building in St. Patrick's. Todd lit a candle for Peter's wife and for the world. Bernie engaged a little, talking about St. Patrick's as she went inside to say a prayer. But she was withdrawn from the group as she sat quietly in the front seat. Kelly turned down 21st and towards the piers. They were still talking and laughing when the van pulled up to the seminary. Bernie asked Kelly to drop her off. I want to collect some things. Get prepared for tomorrow. Antonia pointed to the chimney. There's a fire going. Sal's back. I bet he's freaked out right now. I'll talk to Sal. We'll get up to your camp on our own. Enjoy your day. Peace be with you all. Bernie opened the door and got out. Shotgun, Antonia called from the back row. I got shotgun. Give me that seat. He struggled past Avery and Jacob to move up in the van. Once he sat down, he turned to Kelly. Let's go, before that dude comes out and ruins the day. To the piers, Kelly yelled. To the piers, the van shouted back. Even Antonio was excited and involved. He wanted to get on a boat and be reminded of his father. Bernie waved as they pulled away from the curb. 37. The smile fell from Bernie's face as she watched the van pull away towards the Hudson River. She was deeply troubled and conflicted. She did not want to leave her seminary. It was her sanctuary, her place of solitude, the center of her spiritual universe. She prayed for understanding in the chapel too many times to walk away. Her daughter was baptized in the chapel. Her husband held her child's head as Bernie administered the rite. She had fond memories that she did not want to lose. Bernie had bad memories, too. She delivered her daughter's last rites in the chapel, followed by her husband's 5 days later. She gave last rites to hundreds of people, maybe thousands of people who stood in line outside the chapel to receive their dying peace. She worked tirelessly to give solace to the sick as she remained healthy. She believed that her purpose was to carry on the word of God, to be his lone soldier left on earth. Like many times in the Bible, she was being tested. Her family was taken from her so she could focus on the word. But where was the rainbow? Where was the dove? If the rapture was the great flood washing away humanity, where was her sign that it was time to start anew? Was she supposed to go with these new people? Was she supposed to find a new place to spread the word? Had her chapel been painted in so much innocent blood, the blood of her own daughter and husband, as a sign to walk away and find a new sanctuary? Bernie did not know, and her prayers went unanswered. She had one night to decide. It was cold on 21st Street. The sun had not climbed over the buildings, and the night air hung over the shaded street. Bernie shivered and walked through the courtyard into the seminary lobby. She saw a large figure hunched by the fireplace, sitting on the hearth. She opened the door to the cloakroom, hung up her coat, and removed her boots. Before she could finish unlacing her second boot, the door to the main room opened, after 5 months of people telling him not to hold the door open to let the warm air out, Sal still did what he wanted. "Hey, Bernie, where is everyone?" Sal wore dirty khaki pants and a large flannel shirt. His clothes no longer fit, draping off his large frame. His drug addiction ravaged his once hulking frame. He was still an intimidating man, but he was withering away. "Sal, where have you been?" Bernie tried to push past him into the warmer room. "I'm cold. May I warm up by the fire?" Sal moved from the door as Bernie walked through. He followed her, answering her question and repeating his. "You know, I was out looking for food for the group." He seldom, if ever, returned from his sojourns with food. "Where is everyone? Did we move?" Bernie sat on the large brick hearth. She did not like being in the small cloakroom with Sal. She needed space to handle him. He smelled, and could be erratic in his moods. She looked at him. His pupils were dilated, and his hands were calm and not shaking. Sal was medicated. "There is a lot of news to share." Bernie waited for Sal to sit down. "Did you find any food?" He shook his head no. Bernie smelled peanut butter on his breath. She looked at the fire. Sal used almost the entire pile of wood. No matter how many times a day they asked him to keep the fire small, to conserve their fuel when he was home, Sal made a large fire with all of their wood and left without replacing the pile. Bernie grew more annoyed, but swallowed her feelings. "A group of people pulled into town yesterday, survivors from up and down the East Coast. They have food and supplies." "Are you serious?" "That's fantastic." Sal recognized an opportunity to freeload. "Yes, they are wonderful people, with children and adults and teens. It's a perfect match for our group." Bernie paused. "But they are leaving tomorrow morning after my services. There's a second group up north. There's a plan to meet and form one big tribe." "North? They want to leave the city?" Sal calculated his options. He might find a few drugstores scattered outside of New York, but unless they were in a larger city, his supplies would run out quickly. "Are we voting on this? I don't know if I like that plan, Bernie. I think we need to talk about it." "It's done, Sal. Everyone has decided to go. I'm the only one who's not sure what to do. I don't know if I can leave the seminary. I have to pray and hope for guidance." She bowed her head, not to pray, but to think. "You can go. These are good people. They know a hard life awaits, but starting a colony outside of New York is the best option for all of us. I know you aren't afraid of hard work, and they can use a strong man like you, Sal." Sal hated hard work. His whole life had been work, building things for other people and getting paid barely enough to cover his bills, not even enough to pay his bills. The rapture took his wife and children, but it set him free. He could sleep until noon. He could nap every day. He could take food from other people. He could enjoy the buzz and calm his pills brought to him. New York provided an endless supply of pills. North would not provide pills, and it would bring work back into Sal's life. Sal became agitated as the gears of his mind turned. "We should have voted on this. I didn't get to vote or say nothing. This ain't fair. I know what's fair. This ain't fair." "We didn't vote, Sal. Everyone just decided to go. The new people have young kids. They have food. How could we vote and stop people from going? This isn't a prison. If Kelly wants to leave, Kelly is going to leave." "This ain't right." Sal stood up. His world was changing, just when he had found a huge supply of pills and was getting ready for summer and warmer temperatures and sending all the people out to find him food, it was all ending. In the current group, Sal was the biggest, the strongest. No one had the courage to stand up to him. He could dominate and take what he needed. That's the way it should always have been. He was always strong. But the old life did not work that way. In the old life, he was on the bottom. Now he was on top, and he was not going to be taken down because of new people. Sal, calm down. Can't you see the shape we're all in? We're starving. We've been given a chance to live and be with other people. This is a good thing. Bernie listened to her own advice, and she realized it was a good thing the new people arrived. She was starving. She was dying. Now she had a chance to live. We're all going. Bernie put her hand on Sal's arm. We have to go. He looked down at her, towering over the diminutive chaplain like she was a child. Sal was a lot of things, drug addict, con artist, thief. But he was not stupid. If the winds of change had already blown through his group, he needed to conform and create the best situation for himself. He was still stoned, and he let the calm spread over his body. "Tomorrow?" he asked, feigning a bit of anger. "After I enjoy one last service." "You want to stick around here, or you want to head to their camp for the day?" Sal ate a jar of peanut butter with crackers for breakfast, but if there was more food, particularly if someone else had already found it for him, Sal would eat. "Well, almost everyone has gone to Ellis Island for the day, but we could go up and meet Jamie and her new friend Peter." Sal was confused. Ellis Island? Why would they go to Ellis Island? Was this a tourist stop for these people? If he was dealing with a group of Southerners who decided to sightsee on their way to the frozen Northeast, Sal's position in the group was looking better. What do they have up there? Sal wanted to look around their camp while they were gone. They have two RVs, a U-Haul trailer full of tables, fire pits, that kind of thing. They're stocked with food, staples like flour and sugar. I didn't see anything out of the ordinary. Just food, clothes, things like that. Bernie was thinking about what she would pack. She was not paying attention to Sal's questions, and answered them absently. "Sure. Let's go and meet Jamie and a new friend. But I better pack some things first, you know. Get ready to leave tomorrow." "Okay, Sal, that works. Let's meet back here in a half hour or so. We can use one of the little cars. The snow is melting on the streets where the sun hits, and there are thawed tire tracks on Fifth Avenue." Where are they, anyway? He still did not know where there was. They're at 59th and Fifth Avenue, at the bottom of the park. The plaza? Are you kidding me? Sal was now certain he could dominate the new group. He walked down the hall and went to the second floor. Sal had taken the last room down the hall from the stairs to keep his privacy. The room had the last radiator before the warm water went back down the side of the chimney to reheat, and Sal received the least amount of heat. But he preferred the solitude to warmth. He also believed it made him look magnanimous to the group. Sal did not keep much in the seminary. He had an apartment on the Upper West Side, a pre-war building with fireplaces in each room. It was a tiny studio where the fireplace heated the entire space. Sal had food, water, and drugs stashed in his real home. He would go there for days. It was much more comfortable than living in squalor at the seminary. Every few days he would get lonely and wander back down to Chelsea. If he cared, he would have told them about the building. It was easier to heat, and closer to places where he could find food. But he did not care about these people. Sal's problem was that all of his drugs were at the other apartment. He had cases of pills there and only a small bottle in his pocket. He had to get up to the other apartment before they left. Sal's bigger problem, and one he did not know about. Antonio was aware of Sal's other place, and was at that very moment telling the adults about Sal's lies and how he hoarded food and stole from the group. Sal sat down on his cot, ran his hands through his dirty, thick hair. "Think, Sal, think. You either gotta sneak out tonight, or run up there first thing in the morning, when Bernie's doing the church thing. That'll work, first thing. Just say you gotta go somewheres. Say goodbye to Shea Stadium or something like that. No one will care. They'll be busy packing." He would sneak out, take a car, a duffel, pack up his stuff, and meet them back at the plaza. Sal stuffed a few of the useless things he kept in the room into a small backpack. He slung the pack and went downstairs by the fire. Bernie was waiting. Sal had been in his room for an hour. His drug-induced haze made it almost impossible for him to judge time. "I put some pictures, some clothes in this pack. I'll leave it here for tomorrow." Sal made a big deal. "I want to take a car up to my old neighborhood in the morning. Say goodbye, you know, the right way. Just like you're doing your last service. I gotta say goodbye." Bernie nodded. "I know it's tough, Sal, but we have to say goodbye to our old lives. We have to move on." She put her hand on his shoulder affectionately, empathizing with his grief. She bought it, Sal thought to himself. She bought it hook, line, and sinker. They continued small talk as they left the seminary. Bernie's thoughts were elsewhere as she sat in the passenger seat of the car Sal kept for his runs around the city. There was a hint of cigarette smell, a residue from the only bad habit Sal was forced to quit after the rapture. He detested stale cigarettes, and went cold turkey rather than use stale packs. He relied on his pills to get him through the nicotine detox. "So these people, they seem nice." Sal drove too fast across 22nd Street. "Yes." Bernie was furious with herself for not driving. Sal was probably a bad driver when he was sober, but she had never seen him sober, so she could not be sure. Bernie was sure that he was a horrible driver while stoned. She grasped the handle by the window tightly, digging her left hand into the seat leather. "They seem like they want to take care of the three little ones." Sal believed asking about the kids was his best way to win Bernie. He could never remember the children's names, and she knew it. His question had the opposite effect. "Wendy, Bridget, and Cameron?" "Yes, they have young children the same age. It's a perfect fit." Sal took a hard left up Fifth Avenue faster than needed. They were not in a hurry. Bernie heard the tires squeal and the car fishtailed out of control. "Yeah, the kids. I know their names, the kids." He pushed down on the accelerator. Sal loved driving fast in the city. He loved being able to do what he wanted to do. He did not have to listen to anyone anymore. Sal was in charge of Sal. He never had freedom. His father was a tough bastard who made Sal follow rules, slapping him around to keep him in line. When Sal moved out after high school, believing it was his time to shine, he ended up working construction to pay his bills. "Do this, nail that, work this Saturday, stay until 10 p.m., don't talk back or I'll fire you." He started his own business, but then it was the customers that bossed him around, or the banks that held liens on his house, car, and business. Sal's business failed 2 years before the rapture. He owed money to everyone under the sun. His oldest daughter's braces had not been adjusted in 5 months because he was 6 months late on the bill. He could not get the damn orthodontist to take them off of her. His car, a 10-year-old piece of crap, was repossessed. His son, a little too much like him, was suspended from public school. Sal was paying to have him in private school so he would not miss a grade, except Sal could not pay the tuition bill. His son sat at home playing video games all day. Sal was facing his third driving under the influence and possession charge, which meant lawyer fees, fines, and court costs. Sal's wife was an alcoholic who enjoyed shopping and opening store credit cards. Sal, a drug addict himself, did not know how to stop her. Like a fire that burns down a forest so new trees can grow, the rapture destroyed all the good and the bad from Sal's life. It took his family, but it took away his yoke. It took away civilization, but it took away the burdens that shackled him. Sal was free. He drove too fast through the streets of New York City, because that is what Sal wanted to do, and no one told Sal what he could and could not do anymore. The BMW screeched to a stop short of the RVs at 59th and 5th. Jamie and Peter sat in their chairs eating soup for lunch. A small fire burned in a pit at their feet. Hubba was on a bed in between them. He sat up and barked. "That's Sal," Jamie told Peter. "He must have come back." There was no joy in the woman's voice. Jamie was disappointed. She wanted to leave Sal behind. "Well, let's meet this young man." Peter put his hands on each armrest and pushed himself up. He was tall, taller than Sal and the other men in the group. As he aged, his knees and hips tended to get sore quickly. Despite his fantastic physical shape, he needed leverage to stand. Peter towered over most people. Sal was big, but not tall. Peter had at least 4 inches on the dirty drug addict. As the men shook hands for the first time, Peter did so from a position of strength. Sal was immediately irritated. Peter looked like the banker that told Sal he was in pre-foreclosure. Sal had many faces, and today's face was one of friendliness and thanks. "Very nice to meet you, Peter. Sal Torval." Sal gripped the man's hand tightly. "Bernie told me a little bit about you." Sal grinned, almost purred to the older man. "Jamie, how are you? It must be great to have found someone your own age." He went in for a hug with the woman, but she sat back down as he leaned towards her. Sal was high. The pills he popped in his room at the seminary were kicking in. He was clueless to the fact that bringing attention to Jamie's age was rude. "I'm afraid it's just us here, Sal. The rest of our group went to see the sights." Peter pointed to the RV. "There's some soup on the stove if either of you are hungry. I hope you don't mind. I'm going to eat mine while it's still hot. I know it's 50 out today, but that will cool ham and potato pretty quickly." Peter sat down next to Jamie and picked up his soup. "Soup sounds wonderful. I'm a bottomless pit when I come up here. I need to fill up from all those months of being empty." Bernie pointed towards the other trailer. "Over there?" "Right in there, hon. There are bowls in a sleeve next to the pot with spoons in a box." Jamie looked at Sal. "Sal, there are chairs in the trailer. Be a dear and grab a couple. You two can join us." Sal squinted his eyes. He did not take orders from the old woman, but he was in a peculiar spot. He needed to keep a friendly facade with Peter. Jamie had not asked him for favors in months, knowing he would ignore her. Sal, high and irrational, believed she was trying to get him to show his true spots, or worse, was taking advantage of the situation. "I'm not very hungry right now. I think I'll take a walk around the camp. It's been a while since I've been to the park, and this will be my last time. If Bernie's hungry, she should have all the soup." Sal turned his not getting the chairs into a magnanimous gesture. "I'm going to stretch my legs a bit." "I'll get Bernie a chair." Peter pushed himself up again. "She can use mine. I'll grab another." Sal turned angry. The tall man who looked like the asshole banker who took Sal's house was now showing him up. And who the hell was Jamie to give Sal orders anyway? This was really her fault. He hated that old woman. She was bossy and had a mouth on her. She needed to learn some respect. Sal stormed off without saying another word. He flipped up the hood to his sweatshirt to hide his face, twisted in anger. "Just keep it cool, Sal. Just be cool," he thought to himself. Sal wore work boots, the same boots he wore for 3 years. He loved the boots. The leather was broken in and comfortable. He had jeans, a maroon t-shirt with a faded, stretched-out collar, and a dark tan sweatshirt. Unlike the others in the New York group, Sal kept the same clothes he had before the rapture. He had a new car, but the same comfortable clothes, the same drug habit, and the same angry attitude. Sal did not want to wander in the park. It was early, and walking the 10 or 15 blocks to his apartment was his idea all along. He would take a nap, pack up his things for the next day, and return to the RVs later. He did not like Peter, and had never liked Jamie. Spending 4 hours talking to those two, or listening to them talk, was not high on Sal's list of things to do. By the time Bernie came out of the RV with a bowl of soup and glass of punch, Sal was a few hundred yards away, walking towards the Upper West Side. "Where is Sal going?" Bernie asked, confused as to why he was leaving. "I bet he's going to his apartment. That son of a bitch. I hope he gets high and passes out and we leave him here. He's worthless. Worse than that, he's a drag on the group. Jamie spat venom.
Apartment?
What are you talking about? Bernie sat down, soup in hand. Antonio. He's a good kid. He and I talk sometimes when everyone else is asleep. He puts up a tough front, but he's lonely. He misses his family, his friends. Anyway, he opens up to me, and he followed Sal a few months ago. Jamie took a sip of water. And that bastard has an apartment on the Upper West Side, some old brownstone. He has fire and food, and that's where he's been going. We thought he was scavenging for drugs, but he has drugs. He goes off to be comfortable while we're starving. While those little angels are starving. While he saw Ahmed dropping down to weighing nothing, and probably damaging his kidneys from giving his food to the rest of us. That son of a bitch, Sal. Jamie let out a cry as tears rolled down her face. That son of a bitch was letting us all die. Have you noticed he hasn't lost much weight? He's still a big, strong guy. The rest of us are withering away, and he stays fat and burly. I say we call him out on it and leave him to fend for himself. He doesn't want to help us in our hours of need. He can try to survive on his own forever.
He had an apartment? That can't be true. He didn't do that, Jamie, he didn't. No one could do that.
Bernie put her hand on Jamie's leg. Antonio made that up. Sal isn't a bad person. He's just mixed up. The drugs have control of him, but he's not bad. Antonio is playing with your emotions, trying to turn you against... Jamie cut her off.
My God, Bernie, do you even hear yourself? Who feeds the kids when he can? Who stayed with us even when he begged us to move to Queens? Who always stayed between Avery and Sal? Antonio is the good one. He tries to act tough, but he's just a kid. You think Sal showing up for one of your services every other month and saying amen to you means he's a good person? That he's seeking redemption? He's a con man, Bernie. He's a lousy, stinking con man, and his time is up.
Peter remained quiet. When Peter was young, his father described a loud and obnoxious man by saying, "What's on his mind is on his tongue." The comment so affected Peter he became the opposite, seldom giving his opinion without first considering the consequences. Peter led by example as a pilot, father, and husband. The new world was different. It required him to be vocal. He was one of 25 people left in the world, and an important member of the group. It was time to step forward.
"Bernie," he said calmly. "I know you're having a hard time believing Jamie, or I guess really Antonio. Let me ask you this. What if it's true? What if Sal has been keeping a life with heat, food, water, and drugs, and he's been keeping it separate from the group? What would you suggest?" He looked at her as a friend.
"I can't believe it," Bernie replied. "I can't believe anyone would do that to others. If it's true, well, it means he's betrayed us. Betrayed us every second of every day."
She lowered her head.
"I don't know what it means if it's true. I hate to think what the group would want to do to him."
She lifted her head and looked towards Jamie.
"My God, all those nights the girls cried themselves to sleep in hunger pains? All those tears Cameron cried? All the times I averted my eyes as Avery was getting dressed, her body like an extreme anorexic's, and I was ashamed I couldn't feed her? All that time, Sal had food? What kind of person is he?"
"It can't be true, because if it is, that man is a monster."
Bernie set down the soup, disgusted. Peter picked the bowl up and offered it to her.
"Eat. You don't look much like a sumo wrestler yourself. You need to finish this soup and get another bowl. I'm afraid you're going to blow away."
Bernie blushed, her chocolate brown cheeks turning a light shade of red.
"You're right.
She took the bowl from Peter and continued to eat. You were a quiet man, Peter, but when you do speak, you know what to say.
I would enjoy attending your service tomorrow morning. I have missed my faith, and appreciate your leadership in my search to reconnect with it.
Peter smiled at the woman.
There are decisions that we must make about Sal, and we'll make them as a group. It will not be one person's burden. You're taking too much on yourself. Please realize there are more of us to carry the water.
Peter grabbed Jamie's hand after he said it.
Both of you understand. We're a family now, or a tribe, as Emily likes to call us. We have individual decisions to make, but we can also grow stronger as a group.
You sound like a televangelist, Jamie told him, lightening the mood. If you try to talk both me and Bernie into marrying you right now, the answer is no.
Jamie gave a loud laugh at her own joke. Bernie let a warm smile creep across her face. She loved the old woman. Jamie made everything seem better. She found humor all around her.
I am going to say no, too.
Peter blushed.
For the record, I did not ask either one of you, let alone both of you. When you tell this story to the other women, I never asked.
You were about to. I could tell.
Jamie snickered.
You are welcome at my service tomorrow morning, Peter. I would enjoy your attendance.
Bernie continued to eat as she spoke.
We can reconnect to our faith together.
She took a last spoonful of soup and stood. But right now I'm going to continue my reconnection with food.
May I get anyone else more soup?
I put another can on the stove. It should be warm.
Just bring out the pot. We'll all take more.
Jamie was trying to put weight back on after the long winter of starvation. When Bernie went into the trailer, Jamie turned to Peter.
I'm an old woman. I've seen a lot in my life. I'll tell you this. Whether Sal comes with us or not, his time with this group is limited. He can't keep himself under control long enough to function. He'll run out of drugs, or walk off during chores, and we'll have to make a hard decision. Feed a man that won't do anything, or make it so we don't have to feed him anymore.
She looked at Peter with all the seriousness of a heart attack. It would be best if he passed out and we left him. If there is still a God in heaven, Sal Torval is on a drug binge right now. Better we leave him, knowing he has food and will live and die by his own hand, than having to kill him down the road.
Jamie, we're not going to kill anyone.
Peter tried to console her.
You're exaggerating.
Peter hoped she was wrong, but he knew hard decisions were on the horizon. With the Sal conversation behind them, Peter, Jamie, and Bernie enjoyed the afternoon. They had no responsibilities. They ate, sat, and talked for hours. Jamie asked her friend,
Bernie, you've been walking around like a ghost for half a year, and now you're happy and fun. Are you drunk?
Bernie shook her head.
I have been living in the past, living with my grief for too long.
You're right. Peter and his friends arriving was a sign that life must go on. Sitting in my chapel praying that my daughter and husband are still alive is selfish and dumb.
You had a daughter?
Peter asked her. What was her name?
We named her Sarah. We loved her above all other children.
That was our religious family joke. Bernie beamed when she spoke about Sarah, her soccer team, her choir recitals, her math and science grades. She had pride and love in the memories.
My oldest daughter was named Sarah, Peter told them. She had 5 children, bless her heart. I managed to have 2, and I thought that was tough. 2 kids of my own, and we ended up with 8 grandchildren. Can you believe that?
Peter chuckled.
You'd think I raised my kids Catholic or Mormon, not Episcopalian. I had 13 grandchildren. My daughter was also named Sarah, my second child, the only girl among 3 brothers. She was the strongest. I spoke to each one of them before they died. I couldn't visit them, spread across the country like they were, but we spoke on the phone. Each one of them would ask me, "Mom, are you sick yet? You're going to beat it, Mom." And I would tell them they were crazy. "I didn't know you had a daughter named Sarah," Bernie said to Jamie. "Funny we had daughters with the same name. We should start a club. It's going to be a pretty small club." She chuckled. The church van rolled up at 4:30 p.m. Sal had not returned. Bernie could hear singing from the van, and we're too busy singing to put anybody down. Antonio was in the front seat. He was smiling, but his hand was on his forehead. He wore a baseball cap and shook his head back and forth. Kelly was laughing in the driver's seat, as was the second row of Ahmed, Todd, and Emily. The door slid open, and Avery jumped out. "I have to get out of here before they start singing again. They're making up songs, ridiculous songs, and claiming they're real." She pleaded to Bernie to make the singing stop. "That's not made up. That's the Monkees' theme song," Bernie tried to explain. "Oh my God, you're in on it too. Oh my God!" Avery walked away to find solace with Jamie and Peter. The younger kids were laughing and talking. Wendy, Bridget, and Casey sang their new song, "Hey, hey, we're Monkees, and people say we're Monkees so long, but we're too busy singing to be Monkees." They laughed. "Avery," the children yelled after singing, "can you play hopscotch?" The girls ran to the chalk-drawn grid and started looking for rocks to use on the squares. Jay walked to Peter and told him about the island where all the new Americans had to go, and how there was luggage stacked up and shoes all around, and signatures and hospital rooms. Peter nodded as the young boy told him of the day's adventures. Before Jay could finish, Brian, Jacqueline, Jacob, and Meredith pulled a soccer ball out of the RV and headed to the grass for a quick game. When Jay saw them, he explained to Peter, "Sorry, Mr. Peter, I gotta go." He stuttered in excitement, not wanting to be rude to his older friend, but not wanting to be left out of the soccer fun either. "You can tell me all about it on our way up to New Hampshire tomorrow. How's that?" Peter asked the boy. "Okay," Jay screamed over his shoulder, running towards his brother and friends. Brian paused as the group kept walking. He turned and yelled to Antonio. "Hey, Tony, would you like to play? I know we're little kids, but we're good at soccer." Antonio, or Tony as the group discovered he preferred, looked at the adults, shrugged his shoulders, and walked towards the kids. "Sure, little man. I'll kick the ball around for a few." He trotted towards the grassy area that was their soccer field. Jamie, still sitting in her chair, looked at Solange. "If I had known a slap in the face was all that kid needed to engage, I would have done it 5 months ago." Solange nodded. "I believe the 5 months with your group had more to do with his newfound life than my slap in the face. Your group has been sleepwalking, and our arrival has woken you. He understands what life has in store for him." She paused. "He's a good person, but from what I can tell, he is not a good soccer player." She laughed as she watched him try to dribble away from the little kids. His size and speed allowed him to score. His skills were horrible. Melanie walked up to Peter. "No, Sal?" "Oh, he was here." Peter stood to give Melanie a quick hug. It was the most they had been apart for 7 months. "I had the pleasure of meeting the man, but he was not interested in talking to me or Jamie. He wandered off to take a walk in the park. That was 3, maybe 4 hours ago." The adults formed a circle around Jamie, who stayed seated. The good feelings from the fun day were gone. Tension settled over the group. "Did Jamie tell you about the apartment?" Emily began. She was upset, furious that a person would let young children starve while they stayed fat. "Yes. Yes, she did," Peter replied. "I can say, after meeting the man, I'm not all that shocked. He seemed angry from the second he got out of the car with Bernie. He said 2 words and stormed off for his walk." Ahmed looked around the circle. "I know it would be natural for you to think the New York people are going to circle the wagons for one of our own, but that bastard is not with me. We took on whoever needed shelter, whoever wanted to be part of our group, whoever would help us. He fits none of those categories. Maybe he did in the beginning. Maybe he will down the road. But for the last 6 months, he's been nothing but a drag and scourge to me and the rest of us. If this were a job, I'd have fired him long ago. If he was living with us before the rapture, I would have kicked him out. Unfortunately, I don't know what to do. But know this, I'm not going to defend him or go against the will of the group just because he was living in the same building as me for 6 months. I'm done. He took a sip from his water bottle. I hope I can be a good member of our group, and please consider me part of whatever you call yourselves. I'm not a member of the New York clan any longer. There was a pause before Solange broke the silence.
That is the most you have said in 2 days. Where did that come from?
Laughter erupted. Ahmed was reserved and quiet for the last 2 days, speaking here and there, but not opening up. During the outing today, he stayed with Cameron and the 2 young girls, making sure they felt comfortable and had fun. He answered questions when asked, but did not offer long opinions like the one he just gave about Sal.
Well, I just... Ahmed began.
I get it, Todd cut him off. We get it. You want to make sure we don't put Sal in a category with the rest of you. Emily was fuming, despite the joke by Solange.
It's time we decide. We know where he is. He's getting high in his apartment. Tony can show us which one. Do we go there now? Talk to him about his options? Do we see if he comes back before we leave? Talk to him then. Do we leave if he isn't here tomorrow?
She left the questions in the air.
That would be killing him, Bernie said quietly. I'm not sure I can kill him, despite his bad behavior. He's still a person, a human being.
How is it killing him? Melanie asked her. He knows our plan. He knows we're here. If he wants to brave the world on his own, or wait for the next group of survivors to arrive to see if he likes them better, those are his choices.
I don't know, Mel.
I don't know if I can leave him. Have we really come to a place where we make decisions like that?
It's like Ahmed said. If this were work or before the rapture, there would be options.
Now?
I don't know what our options are.
Emily stood next to her husband. She reached for his hand. I'm enraged right now. But I don't want to be a savage just because the world is up for grabs. As my husband has said for months now, this isn't the road warrior. We don't have to act like this.
Melanie replied directly to Emily.
What are you going to do when he steals food from your children in 6 months? What happens when he decides he does not want to take his turn in the fields, and we do not get part of our crops in the ground, or some of our crops die because he refuses to help, yet we have to feed him? If he becomes a drag on the group and is taking food from the mouths of the children, what will your options be then, Emily? He has shown he has no regard for other people. He has shown he does not want to be part of the group. If he wants to stay alone in New York, I don't think we should go knock on his door and bring him with us. He's making his bed.
So we let him kill himself when we know that is what he's doing? We offer no help? If he was drowning, even though he went into deep water not knowing how to swim, you'd rescue him, wouldn't you?
How is this different? Bernie interjected. Melanie answered easily. If the water he went into had sharks and alligators and endangered my life, I'd let him drown. There are bad people, Bernie, and it is not my job to help them at the expense of my own well-being and the well-being of all the other people in my group. 1 year ago I would have helped Sal, but his behavior would not have directly affected me or my children. Now, his bad behavior has a direct negative impact on my ability to survive.
Melanie looked around the group. Leaving him is not a popular or easy decision, I know. But it is the easiest way to fix the problem. If we make an effort to bring him with us, I'm convinced we will have to make a much more difficult decision down the road.
You mean kill him ourselves, Todd said. You're saying we can walk away.
never knowing how he ends up, or take him with us and probably have to kill him ourselves in a year. That's what you think? That we would do some sort of public execution or something? That we would hang him in the village square as a message? Solange answered, We would not use him as an example, or scare our children, but yes, I am sure we will have to kill him. We might try to throw him out of the tribe, make him leave. But a man like Sal? He will not leave without hurting our chances for survival down the road, and or stealing food and necessary tools. Granted, I have not met him, but I know the type of person they have described. He cannot change who he is, and we cannot change who he is either. You nailed him. Don't worry about not having met him. You've nailed his personality, and you're probably right. Ahmed backed Solange's assessment. I say we leave him. If he shows up, wants to come, fine. But I'm not groveling over to 71st to beg him to join us. No way. And you know what? If he wants to come, he walks onto the RV with empty pockets and no bags. He leaves his drugs here. No more drugs. I'm with Ahmed and Solange. Kelly nodded. Jamie stood up from her chair. I'm with them, too. If he shows up, we bring him along, naked as a jaybird, but we don't go after him, and we don't let him follow us with a car full of drugs. Solange, I wish I was as strong as you, but I can't leave a man behind if he wants to come. I think that's where you're headed, leaving Sal no matter what. Okay, I get it. But I have too much of the old way left in me. He's a son of a bitch, that's for sure. But as Bernie said, he's a person. If he comes, put him in the RV away from the children. No pills, no booze, just Sal on his own to detox. That's my opinion. If we bring him and it goes wrong, I'll take him out back and kill him. I'm old. I won't have to carry the burden as long as the rest of you would. She looked at Solange. Will that satisfy you? It is not a matter of me being satisfied, Solange began before Jamie cut her off. I know, dear, I know. You're thinking like we all should. What I'm asking is, do you believe this is a good compromise? If Sal wants to come, we give him parameters. Let him make his choice. If it goes bad down the road, I'll take care of him. No, we have a decision to make now, and then one we'll address if needed later. You are not going to assume responsibility for Sal. Emily shook her head. This conversation is about whether we pick him up or we leave without him. I don't want to talk about the future. We can't control the future. I agree, Melanie said, but I also agree that we should consider the future. Regardless, we have to make a decision for right now. Do we pick him up? Do we wait for him? Or do we leave him? I never said anything about waiting for him, Emily replied. We either get him or we leave him. We aren't delaying our trip to Hanover. We leave tomorrow. The third option is, do we leave a note for Sal telling him where we're going? That would put the ball entirely in his court. He would be making his own decision to stay alone or join our group. But won't that invite a drug addict to follow us with a car full of pills and the same bad attitude? Ahmed did not like Sal and wanted him left behind. Again, I can't control the future. Sal will eventually run out of drugs, even if he brings a car full of them. Whether he detoxes here or 6 months from now, if we can gain strength from him, I say it's worth the risk. Emily's mind was set. You know my position, Solange said firmly, but I accept the decision of the group. I will state my case in simple terms. I do not see us gaining strength from Sal. I see us becoming weaker because of him. I believe the odds are in favor of him hurting the group down the road. If he shows up, I will not throw him out in the cold. I vote for leaving him with his fate in his own hands and decided by his own actions. Okay, Todd said after Solange finished. Let's decide on the first thing. Does anyone believe we should go get Sal if he doesn't show up tomorrow?
Bernie raised her hand. She looked around the group.
My life is about rescuing people, about redemption. I cannot stop because the world died.
Are you okay with us not getting Sal? You can leave with us? Todd asked her.
I may be in the judgment business, but I am not judging any of you today. This is the right decision for the group. I know that. Sometimes, even though you understand it's the best thing to do, you cannot vote the way you should.
I cannot vote to leave Sal behind. I hope you do not judge me as a coward, unwilling to make the hard decision. I am certainly not judging you. You're kind and generous people. These are hard times, unusual times. Don't be ashamed of what we're doing.
She waited for a second. I do, however, plead with you to leave the man a note.
Well, Todd continued, that is our second decision. We're pulling out of here tomorrow. If Sal is not here at 11, he's going to be left behind. That's decided.
Todd looked around the group for any expressions of dissent. There were none.
Kelly nodded. She gave a weak smile towards Bernie. Kelly often thought back on that day, the day she voted to leave Sal behind. She wondered if her personal hatred and opinion that Sal was creepy influenced her vote. Kelly was young, in her 20s, and not used to making grand decisions like the one they made that day. What she would later come to realize, no one, except Solange, was comfortable with the decisions they were making.
The decision in front of us is whether or not to leave Sal a note about meeting us in Hanover.
Todd looked around the circle of people again. I want to leave a note. A simple note that reads, we went to Hanover, New Hampshire, highways 95 north to 91 north to Norwich, Vermont exit. No ultimatums about leaving his drugs behind. No language that asks him to come. Just simple words left here, maybe on his car.
I agree. Melanie said quickly.
I do too, Emily echoed.
Kelly, Peter, and Bernie agreed. Solange, Ahmed, and Jamie dissented. Sal was thrown a lifeline. Bernie addressed the circle.
Thank you for doing this. I don't know if my words swayed anyone, but I believe this is the right thing to do.
Solange nodded.
I voted against the note. But if people believe we should leave one, I agree.
Solange walked over to Todd and Emily, putting her arms around the two of them. Her head was between theirs, and she whispered in their ears,
I hope you do not think I voted against you. I voted my beliefs. I am not against you, ever.
She pulled back and kissed each of them on the cheek.
Let us get ready to leave tomorrow. I do not like this city.
She turned and walked towards the soccer game.
Antonio, she said loudly, have you never played football? I cannot believe your foot skills. Come over here and give me that ball.
Solange wore tight jeans with a tight sports hoodie that accented her figure. Her hair was pulled back into a ponytail, and it bounced back and forth as she strode towards the soccer game. She was a gorgeous, confident woman, and even Emily watched her as she walked away. Emily turned and punched her husband in the shoulder.
Don't get any ideas about that girl. You're still mine.
Me? What are you talking about? You were looking at her more than I was. She kissed you, too.
They hugged each other and gave a quick kiss.
Really? Come on, get a room, Melanie groaned.
Wow. I mean, all we did was hug and kiss, Emily said back.
Don't listen to her, honey. Todd gave Melanie a sneer.
I have to think about food anyway. It's almost 5. We need dinner, and get the camp packed for tomorrow. He stuck out his tongue at Melanie before walking towards the U-Haul trailer. Todd had a fun idea for dinner, and pulled a kettle grill onto the street. He went over to the kids.
Okay, break in the game for a few minutes. I need firewood for the grill. Everyone grab a few pieces of dry wood from the park. Not huge pieces, just a few each, and bring them back to me. We're having a cookout tonight.
A cheer arose from the kids. They scattered to get branches. Solange looked at Todd and asked the obvious question.
Cookout? What do we have to cook out?
Grilled ham, baked beans, and macaroni and cheese.
He grinned at her. But we have graham crackers, chocolate, and marshmallows, so there will be s'mores for dessert.
I look forward to the day when we hunt for meat.
Solange frowned. Canned ham does not sound like something I want to eat. I did not eat canned meat in Ecuador. Trust me, you'll like it. It's good. Todd walked back to the grill, whistling. He had a 5-pound bag of charcoal he pulled from the trailer and placed in the bottom of the grill. It was a Light the Bag brand. The coals were pre-soaked with lighter fluid. He needed the extra firewood to heat the large grill, but the small bag was perfect to get the fire started. One by one, the kids brought armfuls of sticks, twigs, and a few logs, until there was a pile of usable wood stacked next to the grill. Todd selected smaller twigs and medium branches, laying them across the bag of coals. He looked at Cameron, whose nose barely came to the top edge of the metal cauldron. "Would you like to start the fire, Cameron?" The boy's eyes lit up, and his mouth opened in an "oh my" expression. "Sure," he said excitedly, "but I'm not tall enough." Antonio offered a hand. "I'll hold you up, little dude. You light the bag." Antonio flipped his baseball cap around so the bill pointed backwards, picked up the little boy, and hung him over the kettle grill. Todd lit a long twig and handed it to Cameron. "Put the flame at the edge of the paper bag. Once it's on fire, you can drop the branch on the pile." Cameron held the flaming stick with both hands as he hung in the air. The rest of the kids were standing close, watching Cameron light his first campfire. He stuck his tongue out as he concentrated on touching the flame to the red and black bag.
"It's not going to burn me, is it?"
he asked, pulling the flame away from the bag.
"No, dude, you're good. Just light the fire, we're all hungry,"
Antonio encouraged him. Cameron refocused on the flame-to-bag task, and after a few seconds, saw that the bag was on fire. He let out an, "I did it, I did it," and dropped the stick onto the pile. Antonio made an airplane noise and zoomed Cameron around the grill, landing him next to Jay and Brian.
"Did you guys see that? I lit the fire."
"That was awesome," Jay told him. "Let's go get some more wood for your fire."
Before Todd could tell them he had enough for the night, the kids ran off to gather more wood. "I can always put it in the grill for next time we use it," he said to Antonio. Antonio's transformation from cold and angry street kid to warm and helping teenager was nothing short of miraculous. 10 hours earlier, he was a punk who was only interested in helping himself. Tonight, he spun a 4-year-old around like an airplane. Todd was astounded at the change. "Tony?" he asked, still a bit intimidated by the tough kid from the Bronx.
"Yeah?"
"So what made you change so fast? What switch clicked? Why were you angry at 7 a.m. and now you're playing soccer with the kids?" Todd had to know.
"Well, getting beat up by a girl in front of you helped," he chuckled. "But it's choices, you know? My life has always been about choices and roles. When I lived at home, I had good parents, father and mother, 2 little brothers and a little sister. We were poor. I made some bad choices, hung out with the wrong kids. I could never bring that home. When I was in the house, I had to respect my parents, and I loved my little brothers and sister. When I was at school, well, I had to be the guy you met. When my family died, I didn't have the family role anymore. I didn't need to show respect. And I fell into the bad group I had from school. They lived longer. They helped me steal food. They helped me stay alive."
Antonio looked at the tray of food Todd readied for the grill.
"Dude, are we eating canned ham?"
Yeah, is that okay?"
"If that's what we have, that's what we eat," he stated.
"Anyway, I'm with this bad group of kids, stealing and doing bad stuff while all hell is breaking loose around the Bronx. I guess I just stayed in that mode. I thought being a badass was what kept me alive. When Saul slapped me in the face, she told me in Spanish, 'This is your family. You don't disrespect your family, you know that.' And she was right. I did know. Family kept me alive this winter, not being a badass.
Jamie told me you were always good to the kids."
"Well, yeah. I mean, what kind of dick is mean to little kids? I'm gonna watch them starve while I have food? Ahmed, he's a grown man. He needs to find food, but Cameron and the girls, they can't find food. I'm not gonna let them starve. That's as evil, dude. There's a difference between being badass and evil. Todd nodded.